Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
This week, we decided to talk about something a little different. We're going to talk about our hobbies outside of work.
When we were talking about discussing this topic, we were talking about like non-technical hobbies. And I think I was thinking about that, and I don't know that that was originally, that was kind of an early working title. But I don't think that's a good description, because any hobby is sort of a technical thing. And that's actually what the benefit, I think, where hobbies are a huge benefit to us. And that's primarily because it's an opportunity for us to exercise and go kind of deep into a subject, learn the technical elements of it, explore it, learn problem solving, work on kind of creativity, expand your creativity, work on yourself, or just sort of like even expand problem solving. So I think that the benefit that they bring is it gives us the opportunity to explore all of those areas and expand who we are, but do it because it's something that we're really passionate about, that we really enjoy, and it's different from what we're doing all of the other times.
I can go even one better on that. From a neuroscience aspect, when you are working on a problem at work or trying to think about a particular problem, it is often suggested to engage a different part of your brain, which will help your brain kind of work on that problem in the background. So if you're trying to solve some kind of word problem, draw pictures. If you're trying to solve a visual problem, then do something else. And the same thing can happen with hobbies. By engaging your brain on a different kind of technical problem, be it woodworking or metal shop or working on your car or whatever it is that you would choose to do, you can allow your brain to switch over and do something else, but stay engaged. And then in the background, it can actually unlock solutions to problems that you may be facing at work or in other aspects of your life.
So I guess that's why sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I have the solution that I've been trying to, for the problem that I've been trying to solve, but just kind of came to me in the morning.
I find often that if I'm working on a problem and find myself stuck and can't get past some particular blocker, the more I struggle with it, the less ground I make up. If I just stand up, take a walk around the office or take a walk outside and come back to it 5 or 10 or 15 minutes later, oftentimes I have the solution pop right in my head as soon as I sit down.
Yeah, along those lines, I have what I guess I would consider a passive hobby. So I like to solve Rubik's Cubes. So when I'm thinking about a problem at work, I will solve a Rubik's Cube while I think about it, and seems to help me solve them quicker. Or I feel like it helps me solve them quicker anyway. The problems, not the Rubik's Cube.
So Ash, what are your hobbies outside of the office?
Well, I have a few. I have a lot. I have probably too many hobbies. I don't know if you can have too many hobbies, but I have so many in some ways that I don't always get to them all. But I would say the ones that are kind of most important to me would be, the first one would be cooking. If you have seen any picture of me, you can tell that I probably haven't missed too many meals, and that food is a major passion of mine, eating. So I think one of the things that, and I think this is probably true for a lot of developers, are basically we got into development because we like to do something. We like to create something, and we like to do it ourselves. And coding has a very low bar to entry there. But I think cooking is also one of those things where I love to be able to create something and create something that I can do all the time. And then the other thing for me is I like to build computers. So I like computer hardware. So I do computer gaming and I build my own computers, and I love tinkering along with that. I have a refrigerator sized computer that I get made fun of for, but it's all right because I enjoy it.
Yeah, that thing's the size of a mini fridge for sure.
It's work in progress.
So what kind of cooking do you do?
So I do, I guess, a lot, all kinds. I like to do everything myself. So I often will bake our own bread, or I try to like find ways. We recently have gotten into making our own pasta, which turns out to be pretty simple to do, especially if you have the pasta machine. The key thing seems to be you make up some dough and then break it into little bits, and then freeze the dough in like plastic wrap. And then you can just pull out the amount that you need and set that aside, let it thaw out. You thaw it for a day in the fridge, and then like 2 hours beforehand, pull it out and let it thaw out and kind of come to room temperature. And then you can just run it through like the pasta machine that rolls everything out and cuts it up, and just boil it right then and there. So you don't have to like save the noodles. You don't have to dry them or anything like that. And they come out really nice.
All right. So since this is more or less a geek out show talking about our hobbies, I'm gonna dig a little into this. So, because I've tried to make pasta and it was just a failure. What kind of pasta are you making? Are you making an egg-based pasta or are you making something else?
So we're making an egg-based pasta.
Okay, so you form the flour volcano and then you put the eggs inside the well and then mix it all together?
Yep. For the most part, I mean, I don't know, we've always done the well thing where you just put the flour on the table and mix it all together. We've just done it in a bowl and mix it up. What we haven't done and what we might do is like we actually have a bread maker, which also has the pasta, like as a pasta setting. So just letting something else do the mixing. But yeah, we usually use like a egg yolk heavy recipe. I don't remember the recipe offhand, but it's primarily just egg yolks and flour. And there's a few eggs. And then, yeah, just mixing that up. We've been using the semolina flour, which also has like high protein. It's a little bit better for you from that standpoint.
Did you want to talk about why the fridge? Like why would you keep it in the freezer and then in the fridge for a whole day?
Yeah. So what you want to be able to do is you need the pasta to be pliable. So the reason why we keep it in the freezer is it stores really well that way. The dough, the biggest thing about like having pasta dough, once it's made, it needs to be kept from drying out. And so you wrap it in the plastic wrap to keep it from kind of airtight. But then you'll put it in the freezer that'll keep they'll preserve the eggs that are in it. But then you need it to kind of come back to a pliable state. And so letting it thaw out very slowly this kind of goes with just about anything, but especially something as sensitive as the dough. And you need that dough to be very pliable. And so you want it to thaw, but you need it to thaw very slowly. So that's why leaving it in the fridge for about a day lets it thaw and come to like a fridge temperature. And then bringing it out about 2 hours ahead of time brings it to the room temperature that you'll actually need it, so you can actually have the pliability to work with it. The pasta machine is the other piece that's like really critical. It's not a very expensive tool, but it is a really important one.
You have a manual or do you have
a... It's a manual. Yeah. I think it was like $30 or something like that. It wasn't expensive. So the other kind of cooking that I've been getting into lately is with a technique called sous vide. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
So sous vide, John, I think would absolutely love this technique because it's really easy and it's awesome. So what it is, it's fresh called under vacuum is kind of what sous vide is. The wording is French for that. And what you do is you take whatever you're going to cook and you put it in some sort of vacuum. Like you could use a Ziploc bag and just kind of squeeze out all the air. But I actually have a vacuum sealer and I put whatever I'm going to cook inside of it, usually like steak or something like that. You cook that. And then there's a sous vide device, a sous vide machine that what it does is you put the, you know, whatever you're going to cook inside of the bag, you put the bag down in a basin full of water. And then that device sits in that basin. And what it'll do is it keeps the temperature of the water very specifically a certain amount. The main thing is that the texture comes out very different. So like what we could do, like we did it, this last weekend we did too. My wife was really, really craving some steak. So we got like these really nice New York strip steaks from the butcher. And what the sous vide allows you to do is you dial in the temperature. The temperature sets how done you want the steak. And then it literally cooks it. And then once you take it out, you finish it. So in our case, I finished it like on a cast iron skillet that was hot with like some oil. And then I also have like this blowtorch that I use to like sear up the meat. So it gets a really nice crisp on the outside. And you can repeat that process anytime. I feel like we can make a better steak than just about any restaurant right now.
What about you, John? What do you do to engage your brain outside of work?
Well, like Ash, I have a number of hobbies as well. Unlike Ash, I have been told that I have too many hobbies and that there is such a thing. Lately, I haven't had a lot of opportunity to practice any of those hobbies or work with any of those hobbies. Clayton and I just finished up our book on test-driven development. And of course, I've got a five-year-old at home and spend a lot of time playing with him and having a lot of fun with the family. When I do have the time, among my hobbies are bonsai trees. I also enjoy playing the guitar and have been known to do some woodworking. And I've kind of tied them all together at some point and kind of intertwined those hobbies. So I've built some bonsai stands for my trees. I've attempted to build some guitars and I've built a bass guitar before and have a number of electric guitars in varying stages of completion.
Now, see, I thought you were going to say that you grew some bonsai, turned them into tiny little planks, and then built a guitar out of the bonsai. Haven't gone that far yet?
I have not gone that far yet, no. I started with bonsai in 2004, I believe, and like most of my endeavors, I kind of jumped all in feet first and started going to bonsai conventions around the United States. I studied with a teacher in California for a number of years and went out to his place 10 different times over a course of 4 years and got a certificate for that training. I've got a number of trees on the benches out back. Since moving to Florida, I actually had to downsize my collection, mostly because of weather, but also because before moving to Florida, I had amassed a larger collection than I could realistically devote time to. So I kind of downsized to some of my better trees and some of the trees that would acclimate better to the environment here in Florida.
What about the bonsai do you really just enjoy? What kind of like draws you to it?
It's kind of a creative outlet, but there's also, you know, there's kind of a tie into nature and being able to enjoy that aspect of it. I also enjoy working with the Japanese black pine species, and there are a couple of techniques that I tie more closely to logical techniques that you can prune them and do certain candle removal techniques at certain times throughout the year, and you can almost be guaranteed a specific result. They push a flush of candles twice a year if you care for them properly. So you can get that timing down and work with them and kind of get that feedback.
What is a candle technique? It sounds like a little miniature forest fire. What are you doing?
So pine trees push out buds that grow into candles. And if you've seen pine trees along the interstate in the spring flush of growth, you can see that the little tips of all the needles are pushing out. They're called candles. And they push out that initial growth from the ends of all those tips. If you remove those candles, that initial spring flush of growth at a specific time in the spring, you'll get a secondary flush on Japanese black pines.
So when you say a flush of growth, do you mean just that growth spurt that happens in the spring?
Yes.
So that actually makes me wonder a little bit. So the Japanese black pine sounds like a real tree. So is bonsai real trees or are they something else?
So the term bonsai literally means tree and pot or tree in pot. So it's essentially anything resembling a tree grown in a pot. It's mostly thought of as an art form and a technique or the way to mimic nature in a pot. So you can take pretty much any tree or bush, mimic a scene or a feeling or imagery from nature in a pot that you can put on a stand or in display. So anywhere from, you know, 4 to 6 inches all the way up to 3 or 4 feet. Had a friend send me some pictures that they went up to the National Arboretum in DC over the weekend and sent me some pictures of the 200- and 300- and 400-year-old trees on display there.
Wow.
Are you controlling the amount of growth of the tree, or are you simply controlling the shape of the tree?
You can control the shape of the tree through pruning and wiring. So we use mostly for conifers or evergreen trees, we use annealed copper wire. So as you twist the wire around the branch and give the branch a shape, the wire becomes work hardened and will set that shape and stay where you place it. As the tree grows and as the branch grows and thickens, it'll more or less maintain that shape, and then you can remove the wire before it starts cutting in and doing damage. Through selective pruning, you can direct energy and growth. Trees that are more apically dominant, you can remove more growth from the top and kind of force back energy towards the base and towards the inner branches of the trees, and vice versa for some that are more basal dominant.
So with driving, well, you know, while you're controlling the shape, how much are you, do you have a certain image or picture that you have in mind that you're pulling out of the tree, and how much are you getting from the tree and what it's, you know, kind of where it's going?
For me personally, I just work until I achieve a design or a shape or an image that I'm happy with, that I know that is also something that wouldn't be detrimental to the tree. So there's a couple of figures that are thrown out that it's 90% art and 10% horticulture, or 90% horticulture and 10% art. So somewhere in there is probably the appropriate mixture. So if you're better with horticulture and witnessing the signs that the plants are giving you, then maybe you can push it a little bit further. I tend to stick closer to making sure that the tree is going to be nice and healthy, and then, you know, work towards a shape from there.
Okay. That's cool.
So is it possible, and have you thought about making a little tiny palm tree?
They do have palm trees in pots. I am not a fan of those, and I don't know that they're often labeled bonsai trees.
Okay.
There are a number of excellent bonsai trees that are tropical species, buttonwoods and Brazilian rain trees and things like that that do quite well.
So are you thinking about any of those breeds, or maybe do you already have some of that?
I've had a buttonwood before, and I've actually been on the lookout, although not too aggressively. But if an excellent buttonwood presented itself to me, or I happened to be at a show or a convention and the opportunity presented itself, then I wouldn't mind picking up another buttonwood.
So what about your woodworking? You mentioned that you've made some stands for your bonsai, and that you've made some guitars. Is that something that you're looking to get back into?
I'm looking forward to getting back into doing some general woodworking, maybe looking into things like cutting boards for my wife and just kind of getting back into the swing of things, then working towards working up some more jigs and things like that. Got a selection of wood just waiting for me to get my woodworking chops back up to par, and then I can start working on some more electric guitars. I certainly have plans for that in the future, and now that my son's getting a little bit older and I can trust him to be in the shop and be aware of the power tools that could be dangerous, then I can have him out in the shop and keep me company and start to get his interest in that as well.
So I know of one guitar in particular that you've made. I can't remember whose guitar it was, but you made a replica guitar, and you were telling me how you actually dragged it up and down your driveway. Why don't you tell us about that guitar?
So that was a kind of a tribute guitar to Eddie Van Halen's red, white, and black striped guitar. That was a guitar that he had painted himself, Schwinn bicycle paint, I think, as the story goes, and then put some tape around it and painted it again. So it was black and white for a number of years. And as he was in the rock and roll scene, it got its fair amount of abuse. And then as people started to copy that guitar and sell that, as they became more popular, he taped it up again and then painted red over top of it. So it became red, white, and black. So as I was making that tribute guitar, then to simulate some of the abuse that his guitar had seen, I did, in fact, drag it up and down the driveway.
That's fantastic.
I don't know that I could bring myself to damage something that I had been putting that much effort into, because I know you had that was a lot of steps that you had to go through to replicate the paint job and of course the damage.
Actually, I had purchased the body pre-routed and pre-cut to shape, so I didn't put a whole lot of effort into the woodwork. So aside from some initial sanding and then several coats of black paint first, and then taped it up, and then did some white paint, and then started doing some damage to the guitar by dragging it up and down the driveway, and some careful gouging with screwdrivers and keys and other things, and then some additional taping, and then some coats of red, and then, of course, final assembly and wiring it up afterwards.
So how were you pleased with the driveway as a woodworking instrument?
It turned out surprisingly well.
Yeah? Okay.
And just to paint a more accurate picture, it was just the body of the guitar being dragged up and down the driveway. The neck didn't sustain the amount of damage that it would if it were attached to the guitar body at that point. So I kept the neck nice and free from damage.
So Clayton, what are you into?
Well, I don't think you can have too many hobbies, which will be evident when I produce my list. I am into blacksmithing, woodworking, metal foundry, cooking, and I also have several side programming projects that will likely never be finished. The blacksmithing and the metal foundry are related to a goal. So like back in the 90s, there was a show, Tool Time, that it starred a guy who was way too much into power tools and whatnot. But one of the projects that he had in that show was he built a car, like in his garage from scratch with his kids, partially with his kids. But since I saw that episode and I got the idea that someone could build a car by themselves, I decided that that was something that I want to do. I kind of want to build a car. So that got me into trying to learn how to weld. And I have this strange need to get to the lowest level of doing something that I possibly can. So after learning how to weld somewhat, I decided that I wanted to see how low I could go with this path of learning. So I picked up some blacksmithing. I've got an anvil and a forge, and I bought some nice hammers. And then I thought, started thinking about the engine. And as much as I can, I would like to make my own car engine. So I started doing aluminum metal foundry work. So I'm going to cast the block for the engine and the headers and some other things if I can. Also, to make as many parts as I can, I am going to cast all of the parts needed for a metal lathe and eventually a milling machine, which will allow me to make more parts for the car. I don't know what compels me to do this, but that's the plan with all of that.
So do you have you broken things down into any of like other intermediate steps? Obviously, like you have the idea of the lathe that you're wanting to cast, but like how do you achieve that goal? Do you know?
Well, actually, just today I poured some refractory cement for a larger foundry that I'm building. So it's really just a big steel bucket with some it's fiberglass wool, typically called KO wool. So I lined the bucket with that, and then I bought some Castalite 30, which is a 3,000 degree refractory cement. And then I poured / scooped the cement into the steel bucket over top of the KO wool, and that is forming right now. It'll take a few days to cure, but that should allow me to get my foundry up to close to 3,000 degrees, which will be more than enough to melt aluminum and brass and possibly even steel. Which would be nice if I could actually get a steel foundry going, you know, because that means that I can make more things. And then I have propane torches that I'm using to big propane, like a 1-inch pipe that is the tip of the propane torch to heat the metal. And I figure with some woodworking and a metal foundry and a blacksmith shop, I should be able to make just about anything.
So have you tried to tackle this yet? There's obviously a lot of engineering that goes into making something like an engine. Have you looked into that, or how do you plan on kind of going about that?
Well, I am also learning 3D CAD design.
Okay.
With Autodesk Fusion 360.
Okay.
The reason I'm trying to learn that one is because it not only allows you to design the parts, but it also allows you to put the parts under stress.
Okay.
So I can do strength tests. So I can design the frame for the car and then put the frame under stresses and see where the weak points are and make sure that it stands up to whatever the current government guidelines are for the strength of a car frame. when I start building it. But I'm probably quite a ways from actually trying to build the car frame.
That's cool. So I used to do finite element analysis, which is actually what you're talking about there. I can help you out.
I will probably be asking you for help when I get to that point.
So why?
Pretty much all of my hobbies are insurmountable projects, right? So like cooking is not too bad. I do enjoy cooking. For me, the hard part of cooking is I think I enjoy baking more than I enjoy cooking, because baking is a science. It's these exact measurements in this order will produce a result. So you can, it's a very, very technical thing. Whereas cooking is, unless you have a sous vide, cooking is more, well, I left the steak in there until I felt like it was ready and then I flipped it. So cooking's much more feeling that things are right, and baking is more technical. So I think I enjoy baking more, but all of the other hobbies that I have outside of cooking are just insurmountable things. One of my side programming projects is an operating system. So I've learned some assembly so that I could write a bootloader. And then I've learned some low-level C so that I can write the kernel for the operating system and some of the drivers for the, like, well, you guys have already heard for the metalworking and the blacksmithing. I mean, that's, you start with some raw steel and pound it into shape. It doesn't get much lower than that. And making a knife, right? Like, if you don't know what you're doing, making a knife is months of figuring it out, which I'm currently in the process of doing. I ordered some steel for a knife, and well, I have a knife at my desk that I've pounded out of a half inch bar of tool steel. And that one took 5 hours to make, I think. And that was after an hour, 2 hours of video instruction. So I just like doing anything that seems really hard to do. And I don't often finish my projects because they're extremely hard to do, but I enjoy the process of trying, even though I get frustrated sometimes. Which I guess we didn't talk about. Do you guys get frustrated by your hobbies? Because I get like really frustrated sometimes because I can't do the thing that I'm trying to do. I don't understand it, or my hands don't work that way. Like drawing, every time I try to pick up drawing, it's just a failure.
Yeah, I find that frustration always leads to a new hobby.
Like a different one than the one you were trying and got frustrated with?
Correct. So I try to like figure out how I can fix the frustration by doing something else. Not like, you know, trying to learn, okay, well, there's some sort of area where I'm failing to execute or whatever. And so I need to like go and figure out why, and whether that's finding out some other tool or whether that's finding some other technique or whatever. It just kind of all devolves into usually a whole brand new hobby of whatever involves getting that sort of thing right.
That might be how I picked up some of them. Honestly, my hobby journey all started with programming, which is, you know, what I do to make my living nowadays. But I wanted to make a video game, so I picked up some books and I started to learn C and graphics programming and some other things. And then I was like, well, now I need images and sound. So switch over, learn how to make images, switch over how to make sound. Oh, dang, now I need to learn 3D design. Okay, we'll switch over and learn how to do 3D design in 3ds Max in like the 90s on a, let's call it an educational copy.
So with all the hobbies out there, those are just some of the ones that keep us sane. What keeps you sane? Drop us a line and let us know what kinds of hobbies you enjoy outside of work.
We would love to hear from you. Leave us a comment at sixfiguredev.com. And be sure to like, rate, and review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter.
This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I'm Clayton Hunt.
I am John Calloway.
And I'm John Ash.